So, in the Gemara in Pesachim, there's the whole sugya of the din that we have to have Simchas Yom Tov. Everyone with what they enjoy, wine, meat. And it's a machlokas in the Gemara as to whether it's obligatory or it's rishus. You know, you're just allowed to. You're allowed to indulge on Yom Tov. So, the Gemara says, Atzeres kumiyal bodu duvirim lachem. On Shavuos, everyone admits that Simchas Yom Tov is obligatory. It's not rishus. Everyone must have Simchas Yom Tov. On Shavuos, Yom Shinitna b'Torah, because it's the day of giving of Torah. So, of course, there's the classical question everyone asks. You know, if it's the day of giving Torah, it should be the opposite. So, it should be the day of only learning, and you should not have to obligate people to indulge. And we'll get back to that. But what's more of interest for this morning is the continuation of the Gemara. After establishing that by Shavuos, everyone admits you have to have Simchas Yom Tov, the Gemara says that Rav Yosef, the one that was the co-leader of the generation together with Rabba, right? Rav Yosef was very, very makpid on Simchas Yom Tov on Shavuos. And he says, Hachin igla tilta, which igla tilta is the best meat. Ilav hahu yoma de kogarm, because if not for that day, referring to Matan Torah, kama Yosef ika b'shukas, so many people out in the marketplace called Yosef also. So Rashi explains it in the most literal thing, if not for the fact that Akoshko gave the Torah on Shavuos, right? And it caused me hitromamti, I was raised up. There's, you know, many people in the marketplace that are called Yosef, and what would be the difference between me and them? All right, so, this is very difficult to accept, you know, to understand on face value. Because, first of all, yeah, he was a bright guy, Rav Yosef. Right? He didn't get to be Rosh Yeshiva by being stupid. All right, so if he would have gone into any other vocation, right, and, you know, discipline, he probably would have excelled at it also. It's a bright guy. Right, but what's even more difficult is that whatever happened to learning Torah Lishma? I mean, if not for this day that the Torah was given, there's plenty of people in the marketplace called Joe. You're supposed to learn Torah Lishma, right? Not for the purpose of any ulterior motive, not to make a parnas out of it, not to get covered from it. So there's got to be something more going on over here. Doesn't make sense. It's because of Chag HaShavuos, right, that I'm different than any other Joe in the marketplace. And also, the truth is, we have to also infer from the word shuk. Yaakov Yisrael said, Kama Yosef Ika, plenty of people called Yosef. Kama Yosef Ika Beshuka. All right, in the Shuk, there's a lot of people that are called Yosef. Yeah, and that's... All right, before we get back to that, there's another theme in Shavuos that's very ignored. Right, the Gemara says in the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah that, you know, we're judged four times a year. Barba prokim olam nidom. And on Shavuos, we're judged on Perosa Ilan. We are judged on the fruit trees, you know, the fruit that the trees bear. On Pesach al Atvua, and on Shavuos, we're Nidon al Perosa Ilan. And that's what the Chazal tell us, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us, Havi Ushtei Alechem. You know, Ba'atzeres, she's Baruchem Perosa Ilan. You know, it's roughly the Lashon of Gemara. Right, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, you know, bring the Shtei Alechem that we brought on Shavuos, you know, that one of the residual effects of doing that mitzvah is it gives bracha to the fruit of the trees. This is a theme that's a bit overlooked on Shavuos, and something that needs to be understood, especially when you know that Torah is called an Eitz, Eitz Chaim Hil Machazikim Ba. Right, and we mentioned, we learned in the Nefesh HaChaim, right, the Gemara in Shabbos, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu compared Am Yisrael to a tapuach, right, which actually means the esrog tree, and the biblical tapuach is the esrog. Right, ma tapuach said pirio kodem le'olav, that's like by the esrog, the fruit bud comes out even before the leaves. So also Am Yisrael's magdim nasa l'nishma. We said nasa for nishma, nasa, which is the goal, the fruit. Yeah, you know, we said even before, you know, the nishma, which is the means to the goal. You have to hear it to know what to do. So, like, you know, the fruit before the leaves, nasa before nishma. There's definitely something there. Something that has to be analyzed. The sixth day of creation. It's really an action-packed day. A lot happened on that day. You know, from the creation of Adam, Chet Adam Arishan, right? His judgment, his sentencing, his being sentenced, you know, Bedimus. You know, he came out in with grace. So now that day, so according to the Manda Omar, that the world was created in Tishrei, so that day was Rosh Hashanah. That means Yehiyahu was on the 25th of Elul. And this whole story of the creation of man and his failure, right, and why we're in the brach that we're in today, that all happened on that day. You know, and it's, you know, but again, it's the feed the Shita that the world was created in Tishrei. It's Machlokas. Right, so, right, but the, you know, there's another theme on that sixth day. And Rashi does bring it in Chumash. It says, Vayevayboker Yom HaShishi. HaShishi, the sixth day. It says at the end of the sixth day. Why the sixth day? So, you know, the Gemara says, Rashi brings it, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a Tanai with Maisa Bereishis, that the world only exists al Tanai, on condition that Am Yisrael accept the Torah, on another sixth day, the sixth day of Sivan. So yeah, so so that the sixth day of creation alludes to both Rosh Hashanah and also alludes to Shavuos. Right, the sixth day of Sivan. So now, with that in mind, you know, the before the sin of Adam, there was another sin that happened in reality. Right, when was that?
When the trees didn't follow what Hashem said.
Right. That's where the earth sinned. Right. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you know, that there should be eitz pri osa pri. Right. Fruit trees that bear fruit. Yeah, but the earth produced eitz osa pri. Right. Just, you know, trees that produce fruit, but it wasn't eitz pri osa pri, because Chazal tells us, Rashi brings it, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted tam eitz over pri yoshave. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted that the wood, you know, should also taste like the fruit. Now, you have to understand what that means, you know, for what purpose. You don't want people eating trees, because the whole point of a tree is that it makes fruits year in, year out. So it makes it such a wonderful investment. You don't want people eating the trees. You know, I understand what it means. That, you know, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. That's where the earth failed. So what does it say? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want to punish the earth right then and there. He waited till man succumbed. Right? And then once he closed the cheshbon with man for his sin, so what does it say? Arura ha'adama ba'avurecha. Now the earth is cursed because of you. I mean, say the earth also deserves. Why does the earth deserve to be punished? Well, the earth also sinned. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is waiting for man to, you know, do his chet. And then, you know, once court was in session, so they closed the cheshbon, you know, settled the charges with the earth. And the earth was cursed.
But they said the earth was cursed because of Adam?
Like this Lashon Chazal, which will explain. Sorry, the answer is yes, on a deeper level. But in like the simple meaning of this Chazal, is that Akash didn't want to preside over the chet of the earth until he had to preside anyway on the chet of Adam. So that's where Abura Adama Ba'avurecha is, because you, if you wouldn't have sinned, you know, court would have not sat. You know, you wouldn't have closed the cheshbon.
Right? Isn't that unfair to, I mean, unfair in court? You need you judge someone on their sin, you don't put someone
right.
else.
Right, so okay.
He was going to judge him, but he just deferred it.
So basically you activated the din, but on a deeper level, what it means that he waited until Adam did his sin. So you have to ask a different question. You know, how did the earth sin? It's a robot. You have just done whatever, you know, whatever Hashem says. Now there's many two steps, but one of them is that because where was Adam Arishon's nefesh at the time? It was in the earth. As it says, Totsi Oretz Nefesh Chaya, as it says, Zu Nafshul Sh'Adam Arishon. Lashon Chazal. I mean, Adam Arishon's Nefesh, which was created already before his body, was actually in the earth. And it's and that's why the earth, as it were, had intelligence and free will. So, which means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is waiting till he, as it were, he does the crime again as a human being. And then he'd close Cheshbon.
Let me just get this straight. This eighth tree, Oser Pri, was that Hashem wanted the whole tree
to have taste. I'm not saying necessarily it'll be edible, but he wanted the whole thing to have taste. Have taste, yeah. Mistami didn't want you to eat the trees because, you know, then they wouldn't be around to produce fruit for next year. But
well, as long as there are roots, they're
going to
be around.
Yeah. Okay.
So at this point, the earth had the free will to.
Yeah, I mean, there's
this Hashem's decree.
I mean, like this Shita, because the nefesh of Adam was in the earth at the time. That's why. But you know, there are other answers to this, to how this could have happened. No, but we'll go with this pshat, because the nefesh of Adam was in the earth, and that's why also it makes sense. He didn't want to waited for Adam to sin again. In a sin that actually ran parallel to that sin, and sin again as a human being, and then he would, you know, close accounts with him on all counts. Right, and the earth got cursed. That's why it's hard to make parnasa. Kotz v'darat tzbiach, you know, a lot of wasted effort. All right, so let's just. Analyze, you know, what the sin was, and we'll go from there. Right. First, you have to understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. Why would you want the tree to taste like the fruit? What does that mean?
It's cool or good.
You
have to distinguish between what was edible and what not.
Okay.
He didn't want anything to be wasted. If it was edible and tasty, it wouldn't be wasted. Not that we waste wood, but maybe the bark is wasted.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's hard to know exactly what would have been, you know, if it would have worked out, because we haven't experienced it. But at least as far as philosophically, the meaning of it is that the big problem in life is that the means and the ends are not perfectly aligned. Right? The means is generally something other than the ends, you know. And you know, it's what you have to do, and it's and generally the means is anything but the ends. It's what you have to trade for the ends or do in order to get to the ends, and that's why projects fail. Because you know, it just doesn't hook up with the ends. You know, it didn't work out. You know, you tried, but you know the efforts got, you know, deflected, didn't connect, or sometimes the process was, you know, too long, and you just lost cheshek and you gave up. Right, that's the problem. You know, when going with the latter example, you just gave up in the middle. Not, you know, it's you don't have any time of your goal while you're in the means of it, right? And so you don't feel a time of the goal, right? So it's easy to give up. For the slightest, or to change tracks with the slightest distraction. If there would have been tam ha'etz v'tam pirio shaveh, we're talking about that even in the means, in the intermediate phase that's building up to the goal, you could still taste the goal, feel connected to the goal, which both psychologically you wouldn't give up, because you could feel, that you could taste what you're working for, what you're aiming for. Right? But that also, in a world like that, it means that also the means and the ends are more tightly connected. Right? And, most things that are worthwhile would be matzliach.
Right.
Right. That's great. But of course, that would also root out, any false projects. So you embark, they call it chasing the dream, this scheme, that scheme, get rich quick like this, like that. you would know the difference immediately between something that could be matzliach and something not, right? Because tam eitz over pir shaveh, the means taste like the goal, right? Right. You know immediately that this is bogus. This is a fool's dream. It's not going anywhere. It would have been a whole different type of world, where the means and the ends are a smooth continuum. And maybe also you wouldn't be able to con anybody into anything. That's not real. They say, do this and you will get. whatever. If it tastes like it then, yeah. If not, not. And what the earth, as it were, failed to do was to produce a world like that, just like that. The trees would also, they would set the pace for the entirety of reality. Right? That the means and the ends are a smooth, unbroken, perfectly unified continuum. No one will give up in the middle, and most things would be matzliach, And you'd know a fake project immediately, because it doesn't taste like it. Doesn't taste like. But now that life is not that way, right? That the means and the ends are not in a perfect continuum, so it's works. Unfortunately, in two different negative ways. Negative way number one is, like we said, a lot of projects that were worthwhile fail. Because it's not, there's not a surefire, guarantee of success. That's exactly was the retribution, right? The onesh of the arura adonu ba'avurecha is kotzved dardar tatzvech. You're going to plant, and very little of what you're going to grow is really going to be edible. Be a lot of thickets and thorns and things like a lot of waste. You put a lot of effort and very little return on the effort. Right? And like we said, also, because of that state, it's easy to get frustrated and, give up. But what's even worse than that, since you don't expect the means and the ends, they're not of the same type. Right, and no one expects them to be. That's how you could con people into something. Do this, and you will get rich. Do this, You won't be able to con a person into anything if all the means and the ends would, be perfectly aligned. So it would be easy to distinguish a worthwhile endeavor from a non-worthwhile endeavor. Now, in the state where the means don't taste like the ends, you could con a person, say, do this, and, it'll work out. Whatever. So there's whatever you con a person into. you know, whether it's a get-rich scheme, whether it's, you know, it's fad diets, whatever it is. It's anything, you know, the, you know, and the process, you know, and it goes from bad to worse. You can actually con a person to tell you it's totally useless. Totally useless. Right, so now, yeah, and that's, you know, and that this all goes into, you know, by Chet Adam Rishon, you know, why, how Chet Adam Rishon runs parallel, right, to the Chet that the earth did. Right, is, you know, like the Pasuk says, I believe it's the Pasuk quotes, Asher Asah Elokim Es Adam Yashar, Vehema Bikshu Cheshbonos Rabim. God made man straight. Right? And he wanted Cheshbonos Rabim.
Right? Could you say that again,
please? I'm not sure if I'm quoting the Pasuk accurately, but the Pasuk is roughly Asher Asah Elokim Es Adam Yashar. God made man straight. Vehema Bikshu Cheshbonos Rabim. But they sought many Cheshbonos. Cheshbonos Rabim. In the world that Adam Rishon lived in, you know, and the mentality that he had before he ate from the Eitz Hadas, things were black and white. You know, as the Rambam says in the second parak of the Mor Nevuchim, he saw everything in MS versus Sheker. That's how his mind worked. He saw what is and what isn't. Right, and that's called straight. You know, everything is pretty black and white. There's no, nothing complicated. Right, very little of any gray area whatsoever. And you know, and in a world like that, where everything is the stark, you know, truth versus falsehood, you know, those absolute terms, very hard to get deflected. Right. And the Nachash managed to do it, to deflect them, but the wouldn't have been easy. And even when the Nachash deflect him, it's, you know, he's told him about the possibilities of a world where, of Cheshbonos Rabin, a world where life is complicated, like we learned in Nefesh HaChaim, in that Agah, it's so complicated, can't do a mitzvah 100% without any ulterior motives, and there's not a single evil that you can't rationalize. All right, and you know, it's an enticing world to have this, like, world of you know, infinite possibilities, even though they're all fake, right? But infinite possibilities, cheshbonos rabim, right? All these other things to get entangled with, right? It's not so much that the Nachash, Kanda. You know, conned Adam into saying that, in so much as, you know, he conned him with the unknown. Like, try it. You might like it. You know, it's hard to argue with that, because you're not talking about something that's right in front of you. You know, go into that world of Tov and Ra, where it's all relative, and it's Cheshbonos Rabim, and in that world which opens up the room for Cheshbonos Rabim, right, you know, there's a lot of new experiences that in a world of Emes V'Sheker just don't exist. Right? Because there's just, you see what is versus what isn't, and this opens up, you know, possibilities to make a lot of fantasies real. I mean, sadly. But, you know, and vice versa. Right? Because we live in a world of Cheshbon Osram, that's why it's the countermeasure that is the necessity for a great deal of pilpul, right? Great deal of intellectual rigor to outthink, because, you know, we're, you know, as a countermeasure to the Cheshbonos Rabim, we need all the pilpul of the Talmud, you know, and why does it have to be so complicated? It has to be so complicated because life is complicated. So there's a countermeasure of reasoning and double checking, and because you can't trust yourself to just see the emes straight away. We're not Yashar anymore. We live in a world of Cheshbonos Rabim. Life is hopelessly complicated, and a lot of people enjoy it, like it that way, because nothing you can't rationalize, as we're going to see in a second, nothing you can't sell, as we're going to get to in a second, nothing you can't sell, right? In a world of Cheshbonos Rabim. And the Talmud Bavli is, you know, the Zohar says, the Tarshu Baal Peh is keneged the Eitz Hadas. It's a countermeasure to the Eitz Hadas. it's a das made, put us in this world of cheshbonos rabim. So the countermeasure, that is all the pilpul of the Gemara, you know, raising every single possible hava mina and then eliminating it, because you can't trust yourself to just see the plain truth. Yeah, you have to know the enemy and know your shortcomings and counterbalance it with all the pilpul. All right, it's the cheshbonos rabim. It's a countermeasure to the cheshbonos rabim. Right. It's called, he went from Yashar to Cheshbonos Rabim. Things were just straight, smooth continuum. Right. You know, what you want and what your goals are, you know, it's all straight ahead of you. Straight ahead. That's Tom Eitz of Imperio Shavit. Right. And then wanting the, Cheshbonos Rabim is being open to many different distractions. Right? But what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted from man, the goal, in a world of Emes Sheker, you just see it straight in front of you. This is the derech. Go. It's Yashar.
But if man is the pinnacle of creation,
yes,
the smallest, the whatever, most complex, and then the snake is a snake.
Yeah.
I don't understand, how did this happen?
Okay, this was Adam Rishon's big nisayon. That snake was no ordinary snake, you know what I'm saying? You know, but you know, this was special. This was his test. It's called that he did something parallel to what the earth did, right? You know, everything was yashar. In a world of emes v'sheker, everything is yashar. I mean, the goal that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from you is just right in front of you. The correct derech is just right in front of you. You see it as what is. Everything that's not in line, you see it as sheker, as what isn't. It's yosher, right? And going to eat from the Eitz Hadas Tovaraz to go into the world of Cheshbonos Rabim, which, you know, get deflected and a lot of ulterior motives or ulterior goals and pseudo goals and he broke the yashrus. The das tovra is called that. You know, it's go from yashar to cheshbonos rabin. It's not straight. So you could reason this way, reason that way. You know, the world that we live in today. Right. So now mida keneged mida. Right. The world became a world that it became a lot worse than just that the tree doesn't taste like the fruit. And, you know, it's like kotz v'daro tatzmiach loch. There could be a lot of diffused effort. You put effort and it doesn't connect to the goal. Right. Goals and ideals, a lot of issues just didn't exist before Chet Adam Rishon, particularly the issue of making a parnasa. Just didn't exist. You just picked your parnasa off the trees, right? Fashion, the industry didn't exist. That's not, right? Became very, very complicated, you know, because the man's needs now. And that was the original emergence of the Cheshbonos Rabim. Now you can't just concentrate on your Avodas Hashem, because you have to, you cooked it, you'll eat it, right? So now you have to like deal with, you have these other cheshbonos you have to make. And the problem is that, you know, as we're going to explain, we should have just left it at the raw cheshbonos rabim where we expanded the market, literally, market, right? So now, the original countermeasure that man devised, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew, you know, and made this possible. The original countermeasure that was devised to cope with the outcome, you know, the outcomes of the consequences of Chet Adam Rishon is the market. Right? What happens? Like now we have multiple needs. You know, we have all these cheshbonos rabim, and some of them are basic and are unavoidable. Right? That, you know, you can't, it doesn't grow on trees anymore like it used to. Right? So you have to cook. You have to plant, cook, grind, and the clothes, and shoes. So the original countermeasure, right, for this problem is the shuk. Right, that, okay, so I can't do everything. I can't do everything. So, I mean, I'll do shoes. He'll do clothes. He'll do bread. We go to the shuk, and we exchange. All right, and if they would have just left the shuk at that, it would have been something that's, you know, created out of necessity because of Chet Adam Rishon. But okay, fine. You know, that's, you know, if they would have just left the shuk, you know, in its purest form, it would have been called that. It would have never existed if not for Chet Adam Rishon, because man had no needs other than, you know, being Oved HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because everything was taken care of. Your parnas was taken care of. Clothes you didn't even need. Right? Everything was, you know. Right, so the shuk would have just been just the countermeasure to cope with the fact that man now has many needs. Right? But still, you know, still unfortunate. Still unfortunate because, you know, it's a distraction from Avodas Hashem. And it's just, you know, there's when you really think about it deeply, right, you get into it's depressing that that life is as such, as the Alter Mevarech said, you know, what you have you don't want, and you want what you don't have. And you know, you say if you make shoes, you don't want those shoes, you know, what you want you don't have. That's why you go to shuk in the hope of exchanging what you have for what you want. Know what you have, you don't want, and you want what you don't have, and you hope that the shuk will remedy the situation. You can exchange what you have for what you want. But it's a terrible situation. What you have, you don't want. And what you want, you don't have. Right? But then the, but it would have been, if we've just left it, you know, on the trading on the bare essentials, so we could just quickly get back to what we were really created to do, the barter system would have still would have been endured just fine, right? And wouldn't be taking up so much of our time, right? But then the shuk took on a life of its own, right? It became the golem has rebelled against its own masters. Right? Shuk took on a life of its own, the market. Right? And the market is just growing and growing and growing. We create new markets, stock market, commodity market. No. And then the market's a market for this, a market for that. Things that never should have existed in the first place and shouldn't exist. Right? It's like the market has become a... not a means, it's become an end. It's become a tachlis in its own right. Right, right, the very idea that it's about making money. It's not about getting essentials, it's about making money. It's not about getting what you're missing. What's money? You can't eat it, you can't wear it. So it's okay. Don't confuse me with the facts. That's what it's about, right? It's making money. What illustrates this more than anything else, is just what's happened recently. Everyone's seen the fidget spinners.
Oh,
right? Right? This illustrates it perfectly. Do you know when that thing was actually invented?
Yes.
Patented? Like in the 1970s or something like that.
She wasn't able to get a patent, though.
Right. So it just shows you how, the severe Yerida Sadoris between the 70s and now. At the time when it was invented, so it probably took it to a few, Mattel and a few other toy companies, What does it do? Nothing. What could a kid pretend he is when doing it? Nothing. I'd say throughout, right? Okay, but we've learned the skill of marketing, and we could create a perceived need. And get people to buy things. That's the power of the market. It's Olam of Sheker. Right, what?
I'm sorry for interrupting, but I got a very interesting email about this, that a lady in the 80s, when the stuff was going on in Israel, came to visit her sister in Israel, and the Arabs were already throwing rocks, and she was very distraught by this. So she invented this thing, supposedly, to give the Arab kids something to do instead of throwing rocks. Yes, nobody else got that email.
Right.
And I thought that would, and she wanted to take it to Hasbro, and they said, this is like, who's going to buy this? And then 20 years passed, the patent time, whatever, expired. And now
she repatented.
Oh, no, she didn't. But now here we are, like what Rabbi Becker was saying, like what it's nothing.
Well, the psychologists are pushing it because they say it helps children with ADD. Fidgeting. It's a fidget machine. It makes you that nervous energy, supposedly. I mean, I think it's a lot of bull, but that's besides the point.
That's
psychologists are pushing it for children with ADD to give them something to do.
But when they're doing this, they're not focusing on what's important, right?
Well,
isn't that Rabbi Becker's point?
Playing the psychologists are pushing it. I think it's the most insane thing in the world. I think it creates more ADD or more HDD, but that's besides the point.
Okay, well, of course, the market, it's taken on a life of its own. It's become the ultimate place of cheshbonos rabim. It was originally set up to be somewhat of a countermeasure to the problem, and now it increased the problem exponentially. But even when you analyze the market in its purest form, right, we talk about supply and demand. We've learned that you could create pseudo supply, right, and pseudo demand, right, and get some psychologists to sign off on it. It's a good thing, right? But even in its purest form, you analyze it, and you realize that we're not talking about real innate value. When you say supply and demand, you mean what makes it valuable is scarcity, right? If there's too much supply, it makes no difference how important it is. Like water, right? It's not valuable, right? It's what? It's not. Even a water is a lot more valuable, let's say, than gems, right? But there's an abundant supply of water, right? But who cares? That's all in the mind. So what if there's an abundant supply? This you need, this you don't need. But no one's thinking that way, right? It's scarcity makes its value. Right? That means you're not looking at the values of things be'etzem. Right?
It's also society that makes... I mean, when I think my father would laugh at people paying to buy water when you just turn it on and there's no scarcity of it, but yet stumpbells are paying a fortune for water when it comes right out of the sink. Why?
Because
somebody told us that this is spring water and it's healthier and it's
right.
It's the marketing.
There you go. Marketing. It's marketing. Right, but I'm just saying, even the market in its purest form, when they're talking about, items that have real utility, they still talk about in terms of supply and demand, which means that no one's looking at its real use. It's right talking about whether it's how scarce it is. Right, it's not its real value. Its real value is the benefit you get from it. Right, but no one's talking about it. No one's thinking that way. It's all cheshbonos rabim, as opposed to yoshar. Right, so it's a fascinating gemara. It's a chazal. I can't tell you exactly. I don't remember offhand where it is. It's a famous chazal that talks about. I'm paraphrasing. I'm putting in my own words. Right, you have a doctor. And you have a lawyer, right? And they teach each other their respective professions. So the doctor teaches the lawyer medicine, and the lawyer teaches the doctor law. Chazal say instantly they just both devaluated, because there used to only be one doctor in town and only one lawyer in town. Now there's two doctors in town, now there's two lawyers in town. They just devaluated themselves. They should have kept what they know to themselves. But if one guy knows Baba Kama, another guy knows Baba Metzia, and the one who teaches, first guy teaches the second guy Baba Kama, they both just went up in value. Because they're two bigger Talmidei Chachamim. Why? He used to have a monopoly on Baba Kama. He used to have a monopoly on Baba Metzia. Right? Just like this guy had a monopoly on medicine, this guy had a monopoly on law. What do Chazal say? Right? Because the essential difference between Torah and any other profession, right, is Torah is be'etzem valuable. Be'etzem. It has innate value. Right? And the more of it, the better. Right? You know, medicine is only valuable because people get sick. Right? In a world that people don't get sick. Right? Who needs doctors? Right? In a world where no one's suing anybody, who needs lawyers? Right? It's only valuable because there is a need. It doesn't have innate value. Right? And if and therefore to keep it like valuable, they should be able to charge, you know, what they charge, Hashem Yirachem, right? I don't know, there might be people that, you know, your husbands make that their parnasa that way, so I shouldn't, you know. But, you know, it's scarcity. There's a need, but if the need will be too readily filled, can't charge so much. Got to keep it rare. But it's all because it has pseudo value. When it's pseudo, it doesn't have real value. It only has value because there's a need. Eliminate the need, no one wants it. And of course, so to build on top of that, keep it rare, that people should be desperate to pay a lot for it. But Torah is be'etzem valuable, right? In a world that has no needs, there still would be Torah. Because yeah, Torah's connection with the infinite. Torah is the divine wisdom. It is be'etzem valuable. Not the pshat that Torah is valuable because there's a market for Torah. Torah is valuable because it's valuable. Everything else is valuable other than Torah is valuable because there is a market for it. And there are some real markets, like, you know, which were created because of Bezeas HaPecha Tocha Lechem, but, you know, one man just took the ball and ran with it and created pseudo markets. And they're all the same market right now. The wonderful gift of a Torah, right, is that it's of innate value, number one, first and foremost. And there's something amazing about the Torah that also has no counterpart, right, in anything, in any other discipline, right? Any other discipline, there still is a difference between the means and the ends. Right. Whatever you do, you know, the doctor. Why is he a doctor? Right? To make money. Right? So, you know, his profession of healing people, that's, you know, there might be the real individual that does it lishma. Okay. But, you know, it's for, yeah. The individual that do lishma, they go to Hatzalah. Right? His goal is to make money. So whatever he does, you know, whatever he does is not his real goal. His real goal is the money, right? So what he went to school for, and what he spends his life doing is not what he really wants.
It's hard to accept. Sorry. You don't spend that much time and effort and money. All that money to go to medical school? I don't know.
Yeah, okay. All right. Should we leave the doctors out of it? Talk about lawyers instead. Lawyers. What do you want?
Maybe.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
No, especially in this day and age with insurance company and everything else with doctors, I think it's a big mistress nefesh to be a doctor nowadays.
Oh, no. So let's leave doctors out of it right now. if you really feel that way about doctors,
sorry.
Fine. Maybe the difference, leave it out. And fine. So no doctors. Yeah. Lawyers.
They wouldn't know what they do if they weren't getting paid. Is that what you're saying? Bottom line.
Bottom line is everything a person does in life what he does is not his goal. It's just a means to the goal. No one directly does the goal. Think about it. Doesn't happen. No one does. A person makes shoes, but makes, there's what a person does. You know, it's like we said before, what you have, you don't want. And you want what you don't have. So what you spend your life doing is not the goal. Everything is just a means to a goal. Everything. Right? And that's why there's a lot of diffused efforts, a lot of waste.
So the ultimate goal then, you just said everything is a means to a goal.
Yes. Yes. Right. But by Torah, it's not that way. Right. First of all,
Torah is the goal itself.
That's right. Correct. Now that, so are mitzvahs. You don't cash in your mitzvahs for Olam Haba. We learned this in Nefesh HaChaim. What do we learn in Nefesh HaChaim? Schar mitzvah mitzvah. Mm-hmm. You don't cash in your mitzvahs for Olam Haba. Your mitzvahs are your Olam Haba. That's a wonderful thing with Torah. That Torah and mitzvahs. You're not engaged in a means to an end. This thing is the ends itself. So even though we're not at the final end because you're not in Olam Haba yet, right? But it's not the pshat. These are your tokens that you cash in for Olam Haba. You're building your chelk Olam Haba, brick by brick with every mitzvah you do. It is direct. It's not made up of separate parts.
So the actual process of say learning a piece of Torah, learning part. That's not completing it, but learning it. That's
right. Correct. You get paid for that.
Right.
You get paid for the amelos.
That is the every second you're learning is the end product.
That's right. That is correct.
And that end product is a brick in your Olam Haba.
That's
so
right.
Ultimately, you're building your own.
That's
Olam
right.
Haba.
You're not. It's not made up of separate parts. As if these are the means and these are the goals, it's all a perfect oneness. It's all a perfect oneness. And all the effort spent is all part of it. You get paid for everything. It's all a part of it. Huh? And this goes deeper. People don't realize that I'm not just saying because there's maximum efficiency that even any added effort you'll be compensated for, because that's still like talking about you're exchanging the effort for compensation. It goes deeper than that. You don't realize that whatever struggles you're having, it which made it harder by facing those struggles, you're making tikkunim. Whether it's character traits in yourself that you have to combat, right? And so it's tikkun amidas, right? Whether it's tikkun abriya. So it's not the pshat, you're going to get compensated, but it's more. Even the every yigiyah, right? Every effort expended, every effort that had to be done, right? Is also a tikkun, either to yourself or to the world around you. So it's not sure you're getting paid for your struggle. The struggle was constructive work also. Right? I mean, it only works that way in Torah, that everything is a mitzarif. Let's put it like this, in the Eitz Chaim Ila Machazikba, in the Eitz Chaim, it's Tom Eitz over Pir Yoshava. All smooth continuum. So Matan Torah was—it's the liberation of not just mankind but of the whole world. The whole world was saved from the marketplace. Real value. It given real value. Being put on a very straight path that leads to tikkun. Failsafe. Failsafe. It's yosher. In a world without Torah, a person could try to do good. You don't know never know if he really is doing good, because he has nothing to save him from the Cheshbonos Rabim. And no guarantee, even if he knows he's doing good, that he'll be Matzliach. All right? Because the means and the ends are not connected in this world. Right? But in Torah they are. And the gift of Matan Torah was innate value and a system that once you're in it, everything is mitzaref l'toiva. Everything is all a part of it on the pure path to tikkun. It's Matan Torah that ensures that the world's going to come to tikkun. Of course, we left Torah in heaven, the world would have continued to be this this hall of mirrors. Right? You don't know which is the straight path. It's the redemption of the whole world. It's the tikkun for chet adam rishon. That's why it's a bit of simchas yontov, because it's really it's the liberation of the whole world from chet adam rishon. We're getting back to the Eitz Chaim. The Eitz Chaim l'machazibah is taking us back to the Eitz Chaim, getting us out of the Eitz Hadas Tovara. It's getting us out of the marketplace, out of the rat race, they call it, bizman hazeh. Right. And that's where Rav Yosef meant. Yilav. Ahu yomer kagorin. Kama Yosef ika b'shuka. Many people are stuck in the marketplace. This gets us out of the marketplace. Right. Christianity and Islam did a great job marketing themselves. Now, if you want to know the power of the market, suicide bombers. Forget about fidget spinners. They marketed the idea. Whatever they promised. It's insane. It's a market. Right? And the Torah gets us out of the marketplace. Back to a world of Tom Eitzo Vipiryo Shava. And that's why on this day we're also judged. The fruits of the tree are judged. There's a renewal of what the world, what trees were meant to be like, which was supposed to be a model for, a simon of what reality was meant to be like. When you say the Torah corrects the market, the Torah corrects the world to get it out of the market. Right. Make things yoshar again. Tom Eitzo Vipiryo Shava. Live a life of real value. Real value is not perceived, not out of scarcity. A life of absolute value. A life where everything that goes into living by Torah is all a part of it. You can taste the tam ha-pri in the eights. It's all a part of it. There's no diffused effort. There's no waste. Every part is equally as meaningful. Kol ma'asecha yu l'shem shamayim. Everything is perfectly aligned to the goal, and not just aligned, is one with the goal. And that's what Rav Yosef was saying. Right? The Torah took us out of the marketplace. So, of course, he learned Torah Lishma. He said, everything else is just one big market. Right, Torah got us out of the marketplace. To a world of absolute value, and in the world of absolute value, everything is one. There's no difference between the means and the ends. It's all one. everything facilitates Dveikus and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything warrants and merits Olam Haba. Everything is its own truth, its own goal. Okay, thank you very much.